Tonight I'm going to talk about the ideal of the spiritual warrior. Move this a little closer. And I'm sure, you know, we all have associations with warrior, the word warrior, sometimes heroic, sometimes very masculine, sometimes very cruel. The spiritual warrior, I'd say the key idea is discipline. And it's a wonderful question just to reflect on, of course. How disciplined are we? You know, and in various aspects of our life, are there ways that we are well disciplined? Are there ways that we're not so disciplined in various places in our life? Discipline, of course, is one of the paramitas, one of the perfections of the Buddha, and theoretically a quality of bodhisattvas. And so the whole question of discipline as a whole, it's a big concept. And so to talk a little about the idea of the spiritual warrior, I'm going to actually talk a little about the Bushido tradition in Japan. The Bushido tradition was the code of the samurai. And in Bushido, there were seven virtues. And the seven virtues of Bushido are duty, courage, benevolence, courtesy, truthfulness, honor, and loyalty. And so I thought I'd talk about these as a way of talking about discipline. The first is duty. Now, in the life of well-educated Berkeley intellectuals, I don't know that the word duty appears all that much. Of course, duty is a very big concept in any branch of the military. You know, any branch of the military, from the time that a person enters, duty is inculcated. And this is precisely because in many moments on the battlefield, duty is the difference between life and death. If the soldiers are disciplined in that moment versus undisciplined, it can be a life or death difference. And I think that's an important framework to bring to duty. Do we have urgency about our spiritual work? Do we have urgency about becoming the person that we could become? You know, and it's not that there is any one specific thing that necessarily is a duty. I think we all have these things that we know, you know, I would be better if I were doing X, or I would be better if I were not doing so much of this, or that sort of thing. You know, to what extent do we have urgency around that? To what extent do we have urgency around living out the best life we can? You know, and in a way, it is a life and death decision. It's not that someone's going to shoot us, but how disciplined I am now, how urgently I do my spiritual work now, will have a profound effect on the kind of life I have 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. You know, and I think it's very easy to say that, you know, a life with decades of spiritual work versus a life with decade, you know, with those decades without spiritual work would be entirely different. You know, one as it were gains an entire life by doing spiritual work. And so in a way it is a kind of life and death decision. And so it's a very interesting question just to focus on. You know, if I were to live out my duty to my higher self, what would that be? How would that show up? You know, in what way could I be more dutiful to what is best in me? The second virtue is courage. and it seems almost self-evident that a warrior would need courage. And certainly spiritual work involves courage. I think anyone who has done any amount of work on the path would agree that there's parts of the path that require courage. There's parts of the path that require looking at our deepest fears. And I think the way I would frame courage, sometimes in teaching, we talk about three zones, the green zone, the yellow zone, and the red zone. And when I'm teaching my students, the green zone is when my students are totally comfortable. They know what we're talking about already. They're highly competent in it. It's a piece of cake what they're doing. Yellow is when they're a little bit stretched. There's a little bit of a challenge. And red is when they're entirely overwhelmed, you know? And my job as a teacher is to keep my students in the yellow zone as much as possible. Keep them in that zone of just stretch beyond what they can do, because that's when the most learning happens. Very little learning happens in the green, and very little learning happens in the red, because they're just blown out and overwhelmed. And so a very good way to think about courage, I think, for all of us is how much of my life am I living in the yellow zone? How much of my life am I leaning into my edge, leaning into what's a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit new, you know, feels a little bit edgy for me, you know? And it might be something that hundreds and thousands of other people do as part of their ordinary life, but it's edgy for me, you know, that kind of thing. We get courage by facing the things that we fear, and not so much by facing them in a way that we're blown out and overwhelmed, but in a way that we can lean into them a little bit every day. The next two, benevolence and courtesy, it's very funny. The Bushido tradition, of course, is heavily influenced by Zen, but it's also heavily influenced by Confucianism. Confucius ideas had a major impact on the Bushido tradition. And these two, the kanji in Japan, are Chinese characters that come directly out of Confucius's writings. And they're both central concepts in the Confucian system. So benevolence, what did Confucius mean by benevolence? I should say both of these are, they're single characters that are not well translated by single words in English, you know. By benevolence, Confucius meant, first of all, a kind of nobility. You might say an ability to relate in a noble way to everything that is human. And perhaps another way to say the same thing, an ability to have a very large container for all human experience. You know, and again, we grow the size of our container by spending time in the yellow zone, by leaning into what's uncomfortable until it becomes comfortable. And so benevolence, it has this very broad-hearted quality to it. This ability to bring my best in a way of tremendous stability, inner stability, to any human situation, to any human energy. Now the next one, courtesy, this is even more poorly translated. It's very funny. Confucius made the explicit claim, I am not an innovator. I only pass on the wisdom of the ancients. But in fact, he was an innovator, despite his claim. And this was actually one of his biggest innovations, the use of this particular character. Before Confucius's time, this particular Chinese character was used only for the temple ritual. It was used only to denote the kind of reverence and respect that people would have for each other in sacred ceremony. And Confucius took this word and used it to apply to all human relationships, with the implication being that any time two people are connecting, there's something sacred there. You are, as it were, in the temple when you're connecting with any other human being. And carrying that sense of presence, that sense of reverence, that's what the character connotes. So that's what's poorly translated by that single word, courtesy. The next one is truthfulness. And it's always a wonderful question. How truthful are you with yourself? How truthful am I with myself? You know? What are the truths that I don't want to look at? You know? There's always some. Part of truthfulness is, the most important part, of course, is being true to oneself. And also it has to do with, there's an element of integrity. There's an element of, for example, are the words coming out of my mouth reflective of my actions, my behaviors, my emotional energy, you know, or am I'm doing some jabber and there's a mismatch with how it actually is in my body and is in my life. You know, truthfulness implies a kind of congruence between what I say, what I do, how I feel, that all of these are lined up in a way. And when a person can speak from that place of being deeply lined up, that's very powerful. The sixth quality is honor. You know, what does it mean to be honorable? How would I live my life if I wanted to live in the most honorable way possible? You know, honor implies a kind of self-valuing, not in a way of making myself special or different, but acknowledging the tremendous human dignity and preciousness just of living my own life. And it's almost this way of valuing oneself so that one can value others. You know, I'm going to look at myself as precious and deeply worthwhile so that I can treat others as precious and deeply worthwhile. You know, how would you live if you really believed that you were worthy of honor? How would you live if you really believed that you were truly precious and worthwhile? And the final one, loyalty. What are we loyal to? You know, we have these values that we say are our values, you know. Suppose someone followed us around with a film camera for a couple days and just like filmed our whole life. Would an objective observer looking at our life be able to tell what we valued? You know? It's a really good question. You know? How actually loyal am I to the things that I say I'm loyal to, you know? And of course, a lot of times loyalty is framed in an interpersonal way, and rightly so. I mean, I think loyalty to people there's something much richer and more passionate about that than loyalty to ideas. But in the Jungian sense, I'll say that just as we can be loyal to external others, we can also be loyal to internal others. And in particular, we could be loyal to our better self. We could be loyal to our highest self. You know, and there's a great quote on the quote sheet, a quote about loyalty, which you may have heard, and it says something along the lines of, a true friend is someone who walks into the room when everyone else is walking out, you know, and just, you know, just that endearing quality of loyalty, someone to be there for you at that moment of, you know, when everything else is falling apart. You know, can I be loyal in that way to my highest self? even when everything else in my psyche is saying, this isn't working, life is horrible, can I still be loyal to my highest self? You know, can I be loyal in that way? That's a very high bar. So all of these qualities are particular focuses that we can use to think about discipline and to think about the path of the spiritual warrior. Again, duty, courage, benevolence, courtesy, truthfulness, honor, and loyalty. And I'll share this anecdote that it was related to me. It was some author who wrote about this, and I'm not sure who the author was. But the author is someone who, as a young man, studied Aikido. And Aikido, of course, it's a martial art form, but it's the way of peace. It's all about defense and using your opponent's energy against them. And, you know, nobody attacks anybody else with Aikido, you know. And so this guy had trained extensively, and he had all these techniques, and he was kind of looking for, like, am I going to have this big moment sometime when, you know, somebody's doing something bad and I'm going to be able to step in and save the day, you know, this kind of thing. And he shared at one point he was on the subway and he was sort of, you know, toward the end of the car, and this big drunk guy gets on and he's yelling and he's cursing and he's starting to act threatening toward people, and the author is starting to get excited. He's thinking, maybe this is my big opportunity to, you know, I'm going to be the mighty enforcer of the good here, you know, this sort of thing. And before he can do anything, a little old man starts this conversation with the drunk guy and says, you know, friend, you look upset, what's wrong? And gets him talking. Next thing you know, the drunk guy has his head in the old man's lap and he's crying. And, you know, his wife just left him and he's devastated and the old man's consoling him. And the whole situation is completely diffused. And the author had the insight at that moment, that was Aikido, what the old man had done, you know? And I would say in that moment, that old man was the spiritual warrior, you know, which is not necessarily fierce at all. In fact, it may be quite the opposite, but that ability to diffuse a tense or uncomfortable situation with love and acceptance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'll share the quote sheet. So the Zoomies got it. Now I'll share it with the Roomies. Always interesting finding a way to print on a federal holiday, but managed to do it. So the first quote is from the Tao Te Ching, which is actually a wonderful book to study if you're interested in the idea of the spiritual warrior. Lao Tzu simply says, because the sage strives with nobody, nobody in the empire can strive with him. You know, and I think that's an aspect of the spiritual warrior. You know, being someone who is not even in competition, not in striving with anybody else. From the great mystic Pythagoras of Samos, to whom the theorem, among other things, is attributed, he simply said, above all things, reverence yourself. Seneca the Younger said, nothing is more honorable than a grateful heart. And that's a wonderful idea, that gratefulness is so essential to what it is to be a spiritual warrior. The philosopher emperor Marcus Aurelius said, never esteem anything as an advantage to you that will make you break your word or lose your self-respect. Martin Luther said, when the battle rages, there the loyalty of the soldier is proved. You know, and by extension, when things are difficult, that's when loyalty is really proved, you know. So in our most difficult moments, what are we loyal to? Goethe simply says, what then is your duty? What the day demands. Very simple. and his contemporary Coleridge said, "Our own hearts and not other men's opinions forms our true honor." You know, and what is in your heart? And do you look at your heart as honorable? The great preacher Philip Brooks says, "Character may be manifest in the great moments, but it is made in the small ones." That one is very deep. Elbert Hubbard said, "If put to the pinch, an ounce of loyalty is worth a pound of cleverness." From Richard Wilhelm's commentaries on the I Ching, he said, "When a person has learned within their hearts what fear and trembling mean, they are safeguarded against any terror produced by outside influences. That is the spirit that must animate all leaders and rulers, a profound inner seriousness from which all outer terrors glance off harmlessly." That's a powerful image of someone of tremendous capacity. Oh, we have two versions of Virginia now. Mm-hmm. Morihei Ueshiba, who is the founder of Aikido, said, "There are no contests in the art of peace. A true warrior is invincible because he or she contests with nothing. Defeat means to defeat the mind of contention that we harbor within." One of the greatest conductors of the 20th century, Wilhelm Furtwängler, said, "Living today is more than ever a question of courage." Of course, he was speaking in 1936 Germany, but it could be said of today's world as well. William Feather said, "If we do not discipline ourselves, the world will do it for us." Chillingly accurate. Shunryu Suzuki said quite simply, "Discipline is creating the situation." Carlos Castaneda said, "To achieve the mood of the warrior is not a simple matter. It is a revolution. To regard the lion and the water rats and our fellow men as equals is a magnificent act of the warrior spirit. It takes power to do that." Milan Kundera says, "Unlike the puerile loyalty to conviction, loyalty to a friend is a virtue, perhaps the only virtue, the last remaining one." Jim Rohn said, "Affirmation without discipline is the beginning of delusion." The Christian mystic Henry Nouwen said, "Discipline means to prevent everything in your life from being filled up. Discipline means that somewhere you're not occupied, certainly not preoccupied. In the spiritual life, discipline means to create the space in which something can happen that you hadn't planned or counted on." That one is fascinating. Jeffrey Gittimore says, "You don't earn loyalty in a day. You earn loyalty day by day." Paul Coelho says, "The two worst strategic mistakes are acting prematurely and letting an opportunity slip. To avoid this, the warrior treats each situation as if it were unique and never resorts to formula, recipes, or other people's opinions." Pema Chodron says, "The most fundamental aggression to ourselves, the most fundamental harm we can do to ourselves, is to remain ignorant by not having the courage and the respect to look at ourselves honestly and gently." And then I quoted this before, Gary Moore said, "A friend is someone who walks into a room when everyone else is walking out." Adi Ashanti said, "The process of finding truth may not be a process by which we feel increasingly better and better. It may be a process at which we look at things honestly, sincerely, and truthfully, and that may or may not be an easy thing to do. In fact, chances are probably it's not always an easy thing to do." Malcolm Gladwell said, "Courage is not something you already have that makes you brave when tough times start. Courage is what you earn when you've been through the tough times and you discover they aren't so tough after all." Veronica Roth says, "I belong to the people I love and they belong to me. They and the love and loyalty I give them form my identity far more than any word or group ever could." something wonderfully passionate about that. And finally, Anton St. Martin said, empaths did not come to this world to be victims. We came to be warriors. Be brave, stay strong. We need all hands on deck.